27. Matthew chapter 27, verse 1. I would like to minister this whole thing tonight. I'm excited about it. God just lit me in this thing. I don't know if you can stand it all night. Okay. Verse 1 of chapter 27 of Matthew. When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him unto Pontius Pilate the governor. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood. And they said, what's that to us? See thou to it. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. And the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, it's not lawful for to put them into the treasury because it is the price of blood. And they took counsel and bought with them the potter's field to bury the strangers in. Wherefore that field was called the field of blood unto this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, and they took 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value, and gave them for the potter's field, and as the Lord appointed me. And Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, art thou the king of the Jews? And Jesus said to him, thou sayest. And when he was accused of the chief priests and the elders, he answered nothing. Then said Pilate to him, hearest thou not how many things they witness against you? And he answered him to never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Now at that feast the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto him, whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ? For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, Have you nothing to do with that just man? For I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, whether of the two, or the twain, will ye that I release unto you? And they said, Barabbas. Pilate said unto them, what shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say unto him, let him be crucified. And the governor said, why? What evil has he done? But they cried out the more, saying, let him be crucified. And when Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, his blood be on us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Then the soldiers of the governors took Jesus unto the common hall and gathered him unto him the whole band of soldiers. And they stripped him and put on a scarlet robe, and when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head, and a reed in his right hand, and they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews! And they spit upon him and took the reed and smote him on the head. And after they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him and put on his own raiment and led him away to crucify him. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. Him they compelled to bear his cross. And when they were come unto a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall, and when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him and prepared his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet. They parted my garments upon them, among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there, and set up over his head his accusation written, This is Jesus, King of the Jews. Then there were two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand and another on the left. And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads, and saying, Thou that destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, You saved others, himself he saved others, he cannot save himself. If he be the king of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now. If he will have him, for he said, I am the Son of God. The thieves also which were crucified with him cast the same in his teeth. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land unto the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That's a mouthful. That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, This man calls for Elias. And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. The rest said, Let us see whether Elias will come to save him. Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost, and behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. And the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose, and came up out of the graves after his resurrection, and went into the holy city, and appeared to many. Now when the centurion and they that were with him, watching Jesus, saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, Truly this was the Son of God. And many women were there beholding afar off, which followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering unto him, among which was Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's children. When evening was come, there came a rich man of Arimathea, named Joseph, who also himself was Jesus' disciple. He went to Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered. And when Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it and laid it on his own new tomb, which he had hewn out in the rock, and he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulchre and departed. And there was Mary Magdalene and the other Mary sitting over against the sepulchre. Now the next day that followed, the day of the preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees came together unto Pilate, saying, Sir, we remember that deceiver said, He was yet alive, after 3 days I will rise again. Command therefore that the sepulchre be made sure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away, and say unto the people, He is risen from the dead, so that the last error shall be worse than the first. And Pilate said to them, You have a watch. Go your way, make it as sure as you can. So they went and made the sepulchre sure, sealing the stone and setting a watch. Oh my God, what's in here? We'll go as far as Father wants us to go tonight. Back to that first verse. When the morning was come, the chief priests and elders, that word chief priest is the high priest, and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him unto Pontius Pilate, the governor. Right? Does anybody know what Pontius means?
Other sea?
Yes. Now what does that mean spiritually? What's the sea represent?
Humanity.
There you go. Of the multitude, of humanity. So what's this Pontius mean? He's of the multitudes. It means he's of the nations. He's humanity. Didn't say spiritual, was he? He was of humanity. Pontius Pilate. Pilate means armed with a spear. What was the thing they pierced him with? He had the choice. He could have made the decision, but he let humanity control him. You know why? Because he was of humanity. That's the reason why he made the decision he made about Jesus. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, the word saw there, literally, when he knew he was condemned, who condemned him? Exactly right. He condemned himself. Well, he realized he had betrayed an innocent man. And when he saw that he was condemned, he did what? Now, repented, that's not what this word says. That's what King James says. The language literally said he felt remorse. Felt remorse. Does that mean he truly repented? Repenting means not saying I'm sorry, but it means I changed the way I think. And nothing here says he had a change of heart. He felt remorse for something he did that was wrong. How many people feels remorse but never changes the course of action? Most of the world. He was sorry he got caught.
Yeah.
Not that he stole it, but that he got caught. And it's the same thing with Judas. He felt remorse because he was caught in the betrayal, but not because he did it. Wrong thinking process. So he wasn't at heart changes yet. Okay? And brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the high priest, not the chief priest, but the high priest and elders, saying, I have what? That I've sinned, and that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what's that to us? You'd see to it. That's up to you now. You're the one to do it. We didn't make you do it, did we? Those high priests and elders didn't take his arm and do this, did they? Twist it up behind his back? He had a greedy heart. Jesus knew that when he chose him, didn't he? I think that's the reason he chose him. He let him carry the money just so he could prove it to him. He knew he was stealing from him all along. And said he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. There's another scripture, and I believe it's in Acts 1 and 18. Let me look at it real quick. It says this, now the man purchased a field with the reward of iniquity, and falling headlong, he burst asunder in the midst, and all his bowels gushed out. Now that doesn't sound like what went on back here. Why? One said he hanged himself, and the other said he fell headlong and burst asunder in the midst, and all his bowels gushed out. God showed that to me years ago, because I saw a discrepancy. Do you remember when I taught it? He hanged himself. It was written somewhere in a book that he hanged himself on a cliff. Now, what would happen if you hung yourself on a cliff and maybe the limb broke? Or what would happen? There's why that says that. He hung himself over a cliff and he fell in when he jumped off. Probably the limb broke. But, you know, it's still done what happened. They say he fell headlong and his bowels burst out. Huh? Couldn't even hang himself right, see? But he died anyway. Okay? That's just a scripture that verifies, you know, that there, it really sounds like a contradiction until the Spirit of God opened it up to me and showed me that, you know, he hung himself and it went on over, just busted. So it's not really a contradiction. You just have to understand what God's doing, what he's saying. Well, I think the word would be this, you'd had to been there. You had to be there. And the chief priest took, or the high priest took the money, the silver pieces, and said, it's not lawful to throw them into the temple fund, the treasury, the temple fund, because it's the price of blood. That was one of their traditions. You don't take any blood money into the treasury. They reserved that for themselves. And they took counsel and brought with them the potter's field. No, God, I got to go back and say it. I didn't say it. What do you think the churches are full of today? That's exactly right. It's blood money. Because they stand in the front and preach to them. Some of you are here in stolen cars and wearing stolen clothes this morning because you stole from God and didn't tithe. That's blood money. Because you just put those people right back in prison. They might as well be dead.
It wasn't okay for the strangers.
But they can spend it. Oh, yeah, it's money. It's green. But they bought a field, bought them the potter's field to bury the aliens in, is what the language says, all the aliens. That must be for us. We're aliens. Wherefore that field is called today the field of blood unto this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by or through Jeremiah the prophet, saying, and they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value. And I defy you to find that in the book of Jeremiah. Anybody ever try to find that? If you can find it, show it to me. I don't understand that one. You know why? I looked every way, up, down, sideways, and I can't find anything about it in Jeremiah. And you know what? That word's in the original writings. I can't figure that one out. If you can figure that one out, clue me in. Because Jeremiah didn't speak it. You know who did? Zechariah. I don't know how that got in there. I can find nothing on that, but there is nothing in Jeremiah about it. All you students out there should go look and find that out. I can't find it. Maybe you can. I can't. Okay? And said they gave those 30 pieces of silver for the potter's field as the Lord appointed me. That's what the prophet says. That's what Zechariah said. The Lord has appointed him. Okay? Actually, the name Jeremiah, does anybody know what it means? Nope. Right. Yahweh has appointed. Okay? Whom Yahweh has appointed. Okay, but Jeremiah didn't say this. So the only thing I can say is what his name means could fit the one appointed said what was said, but Jeremiah don't fit in there. So if you can find anything on, you let me know. Zechariah chapter 11, verse 12 and 13 is the quote. Okay? And Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said unto him, "You said so." That's what the language says. "You said so." See, he called him the king of Jews. And when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Even the world, who has nothing to do with God at this time, still recognizes when you're a man of God or a woman of God. They'll know it. You don't have to go out and portray yourself as anything. Just be who you are. It'll come out. You can't hide it. Because when your way of doing things and thinking and acting is so alien, they'll notice you're different. You don't have to wear a t-shirt that says, "I am a Christian," or a bumper sticker, or anything like that. You have to hang anything around your neck or in your ears or on your forehead or in a bow or nothing. You don't have to. Just be who you are, and you'll be so different, people recognize you. So even though religion has taught us all those other things, we need to forget those and live the life that will portray what he wants us to. Verse 12, and when he was accused of the chief priest or the high priest and the elders, he responded nothing. He responded not. Didn't say a word. Then said Pilate, and that's the one armed with the spear, so he has the power of death, didn't he? In the natural, he had power over death. Said him, he said, "Don't you hear how many things they're witnessing against you?" See, he already saw something supernatural in this man's life. He was being accused, and he never reviled anybody. He never said, "They're lying on me. I'm a good guy. I've never done anything wrong. I'm God's son." He didn't say that, did he? What should you do when you're reviled? As a mute lamb, it says. He's given us the example here of how we live. What would be in your mind if this was happening to you? "Oh, God, get me a good lawyer." Right? "Oh, God, get me a good lawyer. They might put me in prison. Oh, they might kill me." Well, this is the mind of Christ. You don't fight. See? I know back in some wars we had people who said they were conscientious objectors, and I don't think for the right reason. A lot of people used that to try to keep from getting into a combat zone, to protect their lives. But today, if someone told me to take up a gun and fight, I wouldn't do it. They could do whatever they want to me. I'm not going to kill nobody. Can't do it. Years back, it was a different story. Before God had shown me my heart. I thought my heart was wicked back then. It probably was. But that wasn't my heart anyway. So, and he answered him, or responded to him, never a word, insomuch or not even a word, insomuch that the governor, what? Literally, he admired him. Man, this guy is looking at death, and I'm the man with the power, and he's not defending himself. Don't you think about right there, he's saying, what has this man got? And it says on farther down, he knows why. Okay? It says he knew that because of envy or jealousy is why they brought him there. He knew this man had something. Now at the feast, the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner. Or one, the word a should be, it's heis, it means one, to release one prisoner, whoever they desired. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Do you know what Barabbas means? It's a son of a father or a master. So he was a son of one of the fathers of Israel or one of the masters of Israel. That means his family had clout, okay? They had the juice. They had the control. So he was in there supposedly for a murder. And yet he's going to get turned loose because of his family. So, therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, who do you desire that I release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ? Now, he said, do you want Barabbas, the son of a master of Israel or father of Israel, or do you want Jesus? Now, what does his name mean? Yahweh is salvation. Now, here's the whole deal. Do you want Adam or do you want Christ? Do you want humanity or do you want Christ? We were talking just before service. What did the Jews tell Moses, who was a type of Christ? They come to him and said, Moses, look, we don't want to talk to God. You go out there and talk to God, and you come back and tell, we'll do anything God says. Yada, yada, yada. You ain't going to do nothing, he says. If you don't desire to talk to God personally, you'll never change. See, because a word from another human being is never going to change you. The only word that will change you is the one spoken in your heart directly by the Spirit of God. Only one that will ever change you. No matter what I say or anybody else says, if you can't hear that reverberate in your heart, it'll do you no good. It'll just bounce off your eardrums and hit the walls and fall on the floor. You got to hear it yourself. That's all this tabernacle's message is. Oneness. Feast of ingathering. Feast of one. It's all about coming back to the Father. That's what he's setting up for us. Okay? So he's saying here, which one do you want? You want humanity or you want Christ? And of course we know the answer, don't we? This is the cry in everybody's heart in the world. Which one do you want? You want to save Adam? Or you want Christ? And you know what you'll say? Don't look at me funny. That's you hollering out there in your natural man. That was you hollering Barabbas. Give me this thief and robber back. Give me this thief and robber back, the one I've been accustomed to living all my life. As far as this Jesus, I don't know who he is. That's what we say. That's the natural man saying this. But our spirit, once we come alive, can never say that again. At this time, these people didn't have any choice. This is all a set-up deal. God laid this whole thing out. It was prophesied thousands of years before what was going on. Come on. It's a set-up. All it is to reveal to you who you are and what nature is in us when we're thinking with this natural man up here instead of thinking with the mind of Christ. That's all he's just revealing to us. God's not mad about anything. Okay. Because he knew that through, not envy, but jealousy, they had delivered him. You know why they were jealous? He was getting people's attention. You better believe he influenced people, see, because he was life. And when you walk with life in your life, you're going to influence people. Why do you think the other churches would say, ha, they're heretics, they're a cult, when you never touched them and never been near them? They label you because they're afraid of something they don't know about. Same thing the Jewish people did, wasn't it? They didn't know Jesus. They didn't take time to know him, but yet they still slandered him.
Perception.
That perception thing again. You're right. So they didn't know who he was, never took the time, but all they knew was he was getting too much attention. Too much attention. And see, the hierarchy that the church system that man has set up is built is there's always someone on top and everybody's got to be in line down the line. If you don't get your ducks in a row, you're a rebel. See? That's not God. If God's no respecter of persons, Steve, how can he respect me more than anybody else? It's impossible. See? The only difference between what I do and what you do is I have a job to do as a pastor and whatever God has for you. Does that mean he thinks any less of you? I'm going to tell you what, you kind of appreciate that them old guys sweeping the streets when you don't have to walk around and all that garbage in the streets, don't you? You kind of appreciate the janitor when you walk down the hall and don't have to walk over vomit into schools and stuff like that that they have to clean up every day. You're pretty glad you got them around. See, that custodial man's pretty handy. It's the way you look at it. And people classify us in the natural, in the sea of humanity, by what jobs we have or what possessions we have. It's foolishness. God does not look at us that way. Only humans label people that way. We've got to get away from it and understand that it makes no difference. If God's called me to be an apostle or a prophet or whatever he's called me to be, that doesn't mean squat. Doesn't mean a thing. That's just my job. Just my job. And my job doesn't make me a better person than anybody else. Neither does anybody else's job make them a better person. It's what we are. We're sons of God. And we're all on that same status. Okay. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him saying, "Have nothing to do with that just or innocent man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him." Now, if you think that was really his wife talking to him, tell me what it was. That was his soul. You better believe it. He knew in his heart, when he knew that the man was put there because of jealousy, his soul was already dealing with him, saying, "Whoa, wait a minute. Something to this. This man's packing some heat that I ain't used to. He's got some authority." And yet this man... Now, you want me to tell you something? Jesus taught another place to a centurion. And the centurion knew about authority, didn't he? Why did he know about authority? He said, "I had authority." And somebody with authority knows authority when they see it in somebody else. You don't think that Pilate knew the authority he was walking in? He knew it. And he had to say, "Whew, what am I into? What are these fools putting me into? They are putting me in a bad position here." But again, where did he come from? His name was what? Pontius Pilate. You know what? You can label him either farther. You know what his number was in the numbering system? 6. He was all man. He come from humanity. He was the 6th Roman ruler. So he says, "Because I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and not destroy," the word literally says, "kill Jesus." Now, who was putting the pressure on him? Everybody wants to say, "Oh, the Roman soldiers did it." No, they didn't. The religious leaders of the day was the ones that absolutely drove the nails. Because if they'd have kept their mouth shut, Pilate would have said, "Go on your way. You ain't done nothing in my court. I don't see nothing wrong." See? But the religious folk and all the multitudes that were stirred up of the religious people of Jerusalem, they were stirred up by the elders and the high priest. The religious folk of the day, they're the ones that did it. Sure he was. They couldn't make no money. They couldn't get those offerings. Couldn't get them. We don't have to do nothing and get life. Get life. Get everything. You can get everything you need, see? Because he was a total sufficiency. And they could not stand that competition. See, but Jesus had no competition. He knew that even the elders were his too. But the natural man has that competition thing in him, see? It's something God doesn't have. And that's one reason why I've said to a lot of people that have wanted me to minister in conferences, I don't like them, because there's a competitive spirit there. You put 15, 20, 30, 40 preachers into a room with 300 or 400 or 500 or 1,000 people, and you're going to have the most competitive spirit. You'll find that better, a more competitive spirit in there than you will on Monday night football. Yeah. I guarantee you. They'll spit and cut and kick and cuss and everything else to get that podium so they can show their wares and sell their tapes and all that stuff. Shouldn't be in the church. This is not about who can say the best message, who can show the greatest thing. This is about us uniting together and accomplishing a one goal in God. That's all. Manifesting His life. That's our goal. Nothing else. We don't have to impress anybody, do we? See? But the church is into impressing the people. They're performing. That's why I don't like to go to conferences. I go there to fellowship, not to learn anything, because the one that teaches lives within me. He's got it all. I don't have to ask anybody. I can ask Him. That's what I'm trying to impart to you. You have this thing. You just don't believe it. You trust your woman. See, she's been lying to you. Not in the natural, in the spiritual. Okay. But the chief priest or the high priest and the elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask for Barabbas and kill Jesus. And the governor answered or responded and said unto them, which of the two do you desire that I release to you? And they said, Barabbas. And see, that's what the natural man cries for. There's nothing in you that draws you to God except God. Your flesh man will never desire to go to Him on his own. And a Pilate said to them, what shall I do with Jesus, which is called the Christ? And they all said to him, let Him be crucified, or impale Him on the cross. Okay? Impale Him on the cross. And the governor said, what evil has He done? But they cried out the more, saying, let Him be crucified. Or literally it says, impale Him on the cross. And when Pilate saw he could prevail nothing, but rather a tumult was made. Literally it said there was a riot coming on. They were about to riot over this thing. See how easy religious leadership can stir people? I'll tell you what, you can go into churches today and you can get them so mad they spit. Well, I've even known some around here where they had fist fights in the church. Actually get in a fist fight over the preaching, you know. I went to do a funeral in New Boston a couple years ago of a friend of mine whose dad died, and I did preach a funeral for him. And when I came in, the funeral director says, what kind of preacher are you? And I said, well, what kind of preacher am I? And he said, well, I just wondered. We had a guy in here a couple weeks ago, and man, we got in a real mess. And he got up in front of all these people, all these hundreds of grieving people in here, and said, see that man laying over there? He's in hell, and if you don't get straight, you're going with him. And a guy got up and decked him. And I'd say, amen, he needed deck. If he didn't need deck, God wouldn't let him get decked. I mean, there ain't no call for nothing like that. And I said, well, you'll never hear that out of me. I said, if you want to label me, I'm a reconciliation preacher. I preach the whole book. I don't take any of it out. And when I got done, he said, if you give me your name and number, I can use you more. And I said, I'm not looking for a job. Sorry, I'm not for hire. I said, I do that free. I don't charge anybody, and I don't want any money, and I'm not looking for a job. So answer is no. You can't have me. But anyway, when he saw it was going to be a riot, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I'm innocent of the blood of this innocent and holy person. You see to it. Who'd the responsibility go back to? He said, I'm not going to do anything. You didn't see him say, kill Jesus. Nothing recorded. He walked away from it. I ain't doing nothing with it. See, the Jewish people wanted to say, the Roman soldiers did it. But he walked away, and he never gave the order to crucify anybody, did he? He said, you see to it. You do it. And then answered all the people. How many of them? And said, his blood be on us and our children. They prophesied it. Because that same blood of the prophet, the Christ today, is being shed by the religious folk. They're still killing Christ. They're trying to kill Jesus today. They're still trying to do it today. So the blood is on their head, isn't it? Now, it doesn't have to be physically putting a knife in somebody's side or a spear. It doesn't have to be driving nails through people, but it's by the wagging of their tongues. That's how they're killing people today, with their tongues. And you know what? That old adage we used to say when we was in school, kids, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, is the biggest lie I ever heard. Because a word spoken into a child's life does more damage than a knife stuck into their gut. Those words will stay with them for life. They do hurt. They do hurt. So the words mean something. Then he released Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, or when they had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. And then the soldiers of the governors took Jesus into the common hall and gathered unto him the whole band or the whole thing, the whole group of soldiers, and they stripped him and put on him a scarlet robe. Literally, this word robe is a military cloak. They give him this big scarlet robe wrapped around him. But see, they stripped him nude. How degrading would that be, being stripped nude in a big crowd of people? Now, come on, this is about the mind of Christ. What would go in your head if someone set you right in front of this room in front of 50 or 100 people and stripped you nude? What would you think? What's in your heart?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not saying what he said. What's he thinking?
With the mind of Christ?
I know that, but what's he thinking? I know he's thinking with the mind of Christ. He was.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, what would be in your mind in that situation?
In the natural.
In the natural.
I'll tell you, it's very degrading.
Sure it is.
Cut to the bone.
Sure it does.
You know what's going to happen? You know, and they spray you down with the light spray, tell you to do a shower, and you got 500 or 600 standing there.
Mm-hmm. No.
Hey. You are very disgusted.
You're helpless.
The world. You want to kill at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Natural man. Mm-hmm. Natural man. See, and that's what's in most of our hearts. If we're really put to the test, we would try to fight and defend ourselves. He never defended himself in anything. That's what I'm trying to show you is the mind of Christ. I've heard all kinds of stuff preached about, you know, fighting, not fighting, killing, not killing. I'm just telling you, when your heart is changed, you'll never have the desire to hurt anybody, no matter how much they hurt you. This is the mind of Christ. You can't hurt anybody. You know why you can't hurt anybody? Because it's not in your mind. I don't care what they do to you, it's not in your mind. See, anything that you can do in an action has to come through your mind. Everything you do, voluntary or involuntary, everything in your body, still, the mind controls it. If your mind is the mind of Christ, you can't even think about hurting anybody. It's not in your heart. You can't do it. That's what I'm trying to show you. If there's something contrary to that in our hearts, we need to deal with it. We need to deal with this thing. Get it out. And I'm saying get it out. I don't mean go behind a tree and hide and say, Lord, get this out of me. Put it on the table. Don't be ashamed to say, I got a problem. There's how you deal with it. Put it out in the open. Say, I got a problem. You know why? Because healing is in the body. And your mind will never be healed as long as you hide something from your brothers and sisters. You ain't hiding it from God no way, are you? Put it on table. Put it on table. You want to see it go away? Put it in the open. Because when you spot the light on that dark thing, what happens to it? It becomes light immediately. All you got to do is be open with it. It's the greatest release in the world. Anything you hide in your life, just throw it out. If somebody wants to talk about you, that's okay because that's their problem. You want healing? Put it open. Get it open. Get it off. Because I'll never judge you for anything you say or do. I don't care. What you say or do, I still love you. Don't make any difference in God saying the same thing. I don't care what you do. But what about this? I don't care what you do. If the world judges you and if you kill somebody and they put you in jail, I'll still love you. I don't have a right to just throw you away because you did something. If you're hooked to me in spirit, I can't do anything but love you. And you can't do anything but love me back. If you have the mind of Christ, you have to. See, it's not a have to because you're told to. It's the only thing you can do. It's just what you do. God is what?
God.
Oh, if I got his mind, then what can I possibly do contrary to that? See? Retaliation, revenge, it's not there. If I got that, I'm not saying if I got it, I'm saying I got it, but I'm saying if you realize you got it, you won't be thinking with that duality of the other mind. Like James talked about, that two-souled man or double-minded man. Okay? Oh, Lord.
But your brother is the only part of you.
Sure.
If you lash out or hurt or harm any other person better than yourself, it's like, if you're truly all part of one, what part of me is all cut off?
Yeah. One of the greatest lies I heard when I was in the world was, I'm just doing my own thing, I ain't hurting nobody. How can I do anything as long as I'm part of humanity? If I'm part of humanity, I can't do anything negative to me without hurting someone else. Okay? How many people commit suicide and say, I ain't hurting nobody but me? Wonder what they're thinking after they did it. They look back and see all the folks that's crying over their loss. See? No matter where we think we're at, we're not disconnected from this world and all the humanity. And there's nothing I can do that doesn't reflect on somebody else in humanity. It's going to go. There ain't no way to stop it. Where am I at? Verse 29. And when they had platted a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand, and they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews! And they spit upon him and took their reed and smote him on the head. Now, I'll stop there so I can get these two verses. And when they had platted the crown of thorns, in Scripture we go back to what's called the law of first mentions. What's the first place that thorns and briars are talked about? Genesis. Adam was cursed because of that. The ground was cursed. And we made out of the ground? Okay. We were cursed because of that thing that took place in Genesis, right? So when they make a crown of thorns, what are they trying to do? They placed it on his what? What's there? They tried to curse that mind that was in him. Didn't accomplish it, did they? But they tried it. They were also trying to show something here in their control, what they were mocking him at. They put it on his head and a reed in his right hand, which spoke of full power and authority. Now, they also spit upon him, which was humiliating him, and they took a reed, right, and smote him on the head. Now, look what they were trying to do. They put the scepter in his hand, and the scepter also speaks of what? Authority, power. They put it in, they decked him out with this big robe, and then mocked him. They were saying, this is what it's saying in the Spirit. If man puts the robe on you, man can take it away from you. Do you hear me? Didn't Moses smote something? He smote a rock, didn't he? Who was Christ? And he smote him twice. Was that his sin? He didn't talk to the rock. He was supposed to talk to it, not strike it. So it's humanity, again, trying to take out the head, the Christ, the baby, whatever, before it got started. And after they had mocked him, they took the robe off him and put his own raiment on him and led him away to crucify him. See, man gives, man takes. God gives, it stays. There's no taking it away. I'm going to tell you, carrying the anointing of God, the Christ in you, you're not going to get popular over this thing. Was he popular? Huh. How many people paid attention to him? That's nothing. That's nothing that's going to make you popular, famous, or anything else. It's just going to be the truth, but you're going to accomplish what you were sent to do. Because he said, His word will not return void unto me, right? Okay, so you're not going to get popular, but you're going to accomplish what he's put in you to do. And as they came out, they found this man of Cyrene, Simon by name, and him they compelled to bear the cross. Now, you know what that word Cyrene means? Supremacy of the bridle. Literally, and Simon means a place of hearing, or hearing. So this man was able to bridle himself, and you know, he was in a place of supremacy in the bridle. That means he was brought down, and I would just about be willing to bet this man liable to have been a slave. Very liable to have been a slave, because he was in a place of supremacy in the bridle. That means he had the yoke on him. He felt the pressure of that. So why would he struggle about carrying the cross? Never says he ever complained or said a word, does it? They just told him to, and he did it. Sound like a maybe a disciple, huh? And when they were coming to a place called Golgotha, right? That is to say, a place of the skull. See here? Where did they kill him? In the place of the skull. It's all pointing to the head. The headship. They're trying to destroy the headship of Christ. They gave him what? Vinegar to drink mingled with gall. Literally, it's wine. It's the Greek word oinos. 36:31, it means wine. It's not grape juice. It was wine. Strong wine. Mixed with gall, which is literally a painkiller. So they were giving him something. Somebody had a little compassion on him. Someone knew what kind of pain he was going to suffer, and they tried to get rid of the pain.
What did you say?
Painkiller. A painkiller. So someone had compassion and knew he was going to suffer a whole lot on his crucifixion, and we're going to help him with this thing. We're going to help him to get this in his system so he won't feel so much pain. Make his death a little easier. Now, what did it say he did? He would not drink. Now, he just said a few chapters back, last chapter, he said, "Father, if possible, take this cup from me. Nevertheless, not your will, my will, but thy will be my will, but your will be done." See, he knew he had to take of this cup of death, but he didn't have to drink the painkiller. He said, "No. If you try to remove the pain out of your life, you're not going to get what you're supposed to get. Pain is necessary in life. It's a very good teacher." Pain will bring the change.
He also said he had suffered all things.
Sure.
He had suffered the pain that we went through. I mean, we're going through. He had suffered as the man.
He was tested in all ways as we are. So if we feel the pain, he has to feel pain. And we can't get out of the pain. And that's the problem, what I said earlier about if we knew our direction and knew our purpose and everything God was going to do with us, we'd run out there and try to change something and take all the pain away from it so we'd have a tiptoe through the tulips, you know, a little walk through the tulips. We wouldn't hit those things, those surprises that check our character. We got to have the pain. He never did anything to do with the pain. He could have, couldn't he? But he didn't. That's the main thing. And they crucified him and parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be full that which was spoken of the prophet. They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there. Does anybody know where that was at? Psalm 22, verse 16 through 18. David was the prophet that spoke. And see, when David spoke those words back there, that was Christ speaking through him at that very time. Because he didn't say, let me read it to you again. Psalm 22, verse 16 through 18 is what I'm talking about. He said, "They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots." He didn't say upon God's vesture, on Jesus' vesture. He said my. And what does that mean? That's referring to himself. David was speaking, but who was speaking through his mouth? It was the Christ speaking. The Spirit of God was speaking through him. So Christ was before all things. He knew what was coming long before it ever happened. And set up over his head this accusation written, "This is Jesus, King of the Jews." Okay? Then were there two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand, one on the left hand. I could make a long thing out of this, but I'm not going to do it. I could show you that there was five. I could make it real short and give you some verses and let you look it up yourself and do better. There was two thieves and two malefactors. You got to go into Luke. Mark and Matthew say two thieves. Luke says two malefactors. And in John 19, he speaks of both of them. Puts it back together again. John was always the what? What was John in the natural? What was his job? Net mender. He was a net mender. John was the one that was given the responsibility to come back and correct all the things that were spoken. Because even that early in the church, they were already corrupting the Word of God, speaking it, you know, mixed up. So John come back and set things straight. Just like Paul was a tent maker, he started churches. Peter was a fisherman, he went out and fished for souls. John was a net mender, he come back and made the corrections that was already creeped into the church. Okay? So he's the one that straightened it out. Let me give you some verses. The word for thief here in Matthew and also in Mark is the Hebrew, I mean the Greek word letes, number 3027 in the Strong's, if you want to look it up. But the malefactors is, I'll say it, kakorgas. It means a criminal, okay? And it's number 2557 in the Strong's dictionary. Two different things. One thief and one a malefactor or a criminal, a different type of evil criminal is what it says. But John 19, verse 18 takes it back to both of them. Let me show you something here. John, let me just get that one. John 19. Come on, Dave. Look here. Verse 18. Where they crucified him and two others with him on either side. Now here's what the word says. That don't show you much. The language says this, where it says on either side. You know what it says? Two on both sides. That's what the language says, on both sides. Look up the word there. It's 1782 in your Strong's Dictionary. It says on both sides, plain English. It's easy. Greek language says both sides. So he had two on both sides. How many did that make? Five. Okay. Not to belabor it, just to show you. And saying, thou that destroyed the temple and built it in 3 days, save yourself. If you be the Son of God, come down from the cross. Okay? Now he was talking about the spiritual temple there. They were thinking natural. He was saying spiritual. Okay? Likewise also the high priest, mocking him with the scribes and the elders, said, he saved others, okay? Himself he cannot save or literally deliver, okay? If he be the king of Israel, let him come down now from the cross and we will believe him. You believe that? If you do, I'll sell you some swamp land out in the desert. Yeah. Because they're not going to believe it. Just a second, something's going through my mind here. Okay, got it. He saved others, himself he cannot deliver. If he be the king of Israel, let him now come down, and we will believe. This is where I'm going, to believe. Habakkuk 2:4 says what? The just shall live by his faith. Not our faith. It's not about us. It's about him. His faith. Romans 1:17. If you want to turn there with me, I'll turn right there real quickly. Read it to you. Romans 1, verse 17. Paul writes in the 17th verse of the first chapter of Romans, for therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live, what? It's literally the Greek word ek, the word by is ek. It means from out of faith. Okay? From out of faith, the just will live. Galatians 3:11. Let me take you there. A few verses here. Galatians chapter, what did I say, 3:11. But that no man is justified by the law in the sight of God, it is evident, because the just shall live from out of faith. Out of whose faith? His faith, not our faith. Philippians 3:9. And Paul says, "And that I may win Christ," from verse 8, "and be found in him, not having my own righteousness, which is of the law, but that which is through the faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith." It's him. It's not about us again. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6. "But without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." Do you know how many people today that's trying to please God out of works? About 90-some percent is trying to please God by works. If I do one more thing, God will accept me. If I read one more Bible verse, if I say one more prayer, if I do one more good deed, God is going to accept me. Hogwash. Hogwash. You are God's son. If you're God's son, then how could he not love you? His nature is love, not condemnation and guilt. Okay? So know that. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now, if he will have him, because he said, "I'm the Son of God." The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth. What he's saying is, they said the same thing. They did the same thing. They were mocking him. "Now from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour." Boy, does that say something? More than that. Look here. Sixth hour. What's number six? I can go right back into Genesis. I can go back to Genesis and preach Genesis 1 out of that. In the beginning, in the first fruit, God created heaven and earth, or the perfect God-man, and the earth was void and formless, and darkness was on the face of the deep, or on the sea of humanity. Huh? And the Spirit hovered. No, he didn't move, he didn't hover. He brooded, he protected the mind of humanity while they were in darkness. And then he said, "Let there be light." The Christ was formed. I can see that pattern all through it. And it said, darkness was over the land. What are we? Until what hour? What's number nine? The gift. The gifts. Life from God is a gift. You don't earn it. You don't work for it. Oh, he can say so many things in so few words. It just takes us human beings lots of words to explain what he said. He said it in few words and has the same import in it. It would take us 10,000 words to say it. And we can't say it with the authority he has. Oh, I can see such patterns in this stuff. It's beautiful. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani." That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Do you know what that language is? It's called Syro-Chaldaic language. He was speaking in the language of the time. A mixture of people were there, and he was speaking in that mixture of language that all of them heard. They understood him. But tell me something. Do you think this was Christ speaking? Who was speaking there? The last Adam was speaking right there. He knew his day was almost over. His time was almost done. He cried out, "Why have you forsaken me?" The last Adam had to die. Guess what? There is no more Adam today. There is none. It's only what we think in our head. And we still want to believe what our woman's telling us in here. Wrong. Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, this man's calling for Elias. Notice something. Did he say anything about Elijah? I've had people say things that I've said. You couldn't imagine some of the things people said I've said. I could say, that board is white. And someone would go out and say, you know, he said that was red. That's red. And you could take a tape of what I said and it says white, and they'd still tell you I said red. This is what the religious system has done to our minds. That man never said anything about Elijah, did he? And here they said, he said, Father, why hast thou forsaken me? Or my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And they turned around and said, this man's calling for Elijah. You don't think that last Adam's mind was a mess? Our minds are a mess when we think like him. That's what he's trying to show us. We've got to not believe anything that comes out of this thing between our ears. It's desperately wicked and evil above all things. We can't trust this thing. The carnal mind is an enemy of God, or at enmity with God, right? It's not with us either. It's going to destroy us if we let it. We don't have to. He's already destroyed it if we listen. And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar. Again, it's the sour wine. And he put it on, that strong wine, and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. And the rest said, let us see whether Elijah will come and save him or deliver him or protect him. They won't listen. He didn't say anything about Elijah. That's the religious mind. They hear what they want to hear. See, we're hearing with our own natural understanding. Hey, when are we going to get out of this? When are we going to realize that my head lies to me? I'm not a liar, you're not a liar, but my mind in the natural is a liar. Romans 3:4 says what? Let all men be liars, let God be tell the truth, and let all men be liars. All humanity can't help but lie. The most righteous person you know, you put them in a spot and they'll tell a lie. The most righteous human being will do that. The Christ will not lie, cannot lie, because it's not in his thought process. The flesh will tell a lie. See, we can't separate who we are from this flesh man to the spirit we really are. We have an identity crisis, and people just can't get a hold of that. If you don't get a hold of it, you'll always be that double-minded man that's struggling in everything we do, and we'll wrestle till the day we die. The only way Jacob got out of wrestling with God was when the what happened? The sun came up. Was that S-U-N or S-O-N? Yeah. And when he saw the light, he realized who he was wrestling with. It wasn't some devil. It was his father. It was God. And he said, I ain't letting you loose until you bless me. See, that's what we've got to come to. We've got to stop this wrestling and find out, what am I wrestling about? Same thing Paul talked about. We fight. We beat the air like we're shadow boxing. We're not accomplishing anything. It's turmoil in our lives. We've got to stop it. If I don't know where I'm going, the best thing I can do is stop. Church says, just do something even if it's wrong. Just do something. You've got to keep busy. You know, if you ain't busy, God's not going to like it. If God ain't speaking, don't be doing nothing. Don't volunteer. Do something for God. Let Him ask you what He wants. He's the boss. He'll direct everything. He doesn't need any help, guidance, or anything. He can take care of it. I promise you. Stop and let Him do it. Jesus, when He had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. Now here's a big controversy. That word ghost ain't right. And oh my God, it's just growing something else He put in me a long time ago. He gave up His soul. It's His soul. Now, Scripture says that we are made from two things. God created us in what? Spirit. His image. God is Spirit, right? And then He said to the Yahweh Elohim, go over and build me a man called Adam. Go over and build Adam. And they went and formed him. They didn't create. They formed him out of the dust of the earth. They made Adam, dirt man. And they put the Spirit inside of him. That's two things. And he became a what? He's a living soul. Now, I taught this and some people went straight up in the air, went ballistic on me. That's okay. There's nothing scriptural to give me the doctrine of spirit, soul, and body that we're a three-part being. We are spirit and we are flesh. And together that makes a living soul. You take two and put it together and they become one. We become a living soul. That's what the scripture teaches. Now, here when he died, he turned his soul. He said he yielded up a soul. His soul died. Okay? That's when he died on the cross. True or false? Okay, I'm trying to get you to think here. Okay? Did he die on the cross? And his soul was gone. Now, Scripture says in Ecclesiastes 12:7, the dust returns to the earth from where it came, and the spirit returns to the God who gave it. Okay. Only two things. Okay? I want to show you something else. Let me look at Psalm 31:5. I need more time in this book. It's not totally broke in. The time I get it broke in, it's gone. Psalm 31, 5. What's he say here? Unto thine hand I commit my spirit. Thou hast redeemed me, O Lord God of truth. This is David speaking, but who's really speaking?
Christ.
It's the Christ. Okay. So we see, he said, my spirit I put into your hands. He went back to the Father, right? The soul died. Now let me look in James. I didn't write this down, but I know it's there. Let me find James. I'm thinking chapter 2 of James. Come on, James 2. There it is, James 2 and 26. That just popped in a freebie there. Turn to James 2 and 26 with me and read this. Now, James didn't throw this thing out of here just out of coincidence, did he? This is just verifying what God has shown me in the past. He just keeps bringing and adding to it. Everybody there? He says, because just as or exactly like the body with apart from the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. He said the body without the spirit is what? So when the spirit leaves a person, this soul returns to what? It returns to the earth from where it came. See, there's not no spirit, soul, and body, and the body's passed away, and we got a soul that can be saved that way. Uh-uh. Those words are mistranslated, just like it is right there. It was the soul that came up. There was what was dealt with. Okay, the soul died on the tree. And who was that? The last Adam. That's what died on that tree. Oh my goodness. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent. As soon as the last Adam died, what happened? What happened? The veil of the temple was rent from top to the bottom. As soon as that last Adam died, the temple was laid wide open. Haven't you got a hold of that yet? It was open. When he died on that cross, the Holy of Holies, that's the veil they're talking about.
Revealed the Christ in him.
There it is. It's open. Why aren't we there? Come on, why aren't we there? Because we're still sitting in that tomb that Joseph of Arimathea rolled that big rock up against 2,000 years ago. And guess what? Keep on reading. You'll find out the stone's been rolled away. What are you doing sitting in the tomb any longer? Come on. We're supposed to be free. We're supposed to know who we are. But we're running around acting like a bunch of zombies or laying in a casket somewhere. We're not there. He's alive. If he's in you, what should you be? Then why can't everybody see it? You ought to be driving people crazy. You ought to be making them absolutely nuts when they're around you. You ought to be so happy that you have the life of God in your life that you drive people plumb nuts. You should. People ask me, so why do you always tell me you're always having a fantastic time? Because I am. I'm not telling nobody that just to say something. I have fun in my life. And you should too. I'm trying to encourage you to know who you are. When you know who you are, do you have to tell a dog to bark? Why? Well then, why shouldn't I be happy? Why should circumstances have anything to do with me? I'm not of this world. Then why should this world have any effect on me? Didn't he say, my disciples, if they were of this world, they'd fight? Then I don't have to fight, do we? Okay. Wrestling with my own head. I don't need to do that. He's already took care of it. Okay, where am I at? No, 51 yet. I'm not finished. But the veil's been rent from the top to the bottom. Right up here. Started at the top and opened it up so our heads could see everything that's there. Right into the holies of holies. And the earth did quake. Hello, earth. When God splits that veil open and you can see what's inside of you, your earth's going to quake. Not your spirit, but your earth is going to quake. Do you know what it is to stand in the presence of God? It's earth-shattering, and that's what it's meant to do. Destroy that fleshly thinking in your mind. It's supposed to push it out of the way. It should. The reason that people's earth has not been shattered is because they haven't recognized the Christ. They don't know who He is. They don't know how He thinks. They don't know anything about Him except they say Jesus died on a tree and He raised again. Hallelujah. Well, that's not the answer. The church has preached that for 2,000 years, and I dare say I haven't seen anything changed by that message. But the truth of Christ in you. And didn't Paul say, if that same Spirit that dwelt in Christ dwell in you, He shall quicken your mortal body. It means He will make it alive. Well, how come everybody's acting so dead? Come on, why are they acting dead? What reason is there to think about death? Death has been overcome. He has the keys of death and hell. Why are we worried about dying? All the church wants to talk about is going to hell and flying away. If I am alive, why do I care about death? Why do I focus on death? The church is death conscious. That's all they know. Where's Christ at in this thing? I'm getting excited. Why are we looking at death? This doesn't mean anything. Forget death. I'm alive. Are you alive? Well, then why look at death? I don't have to worry about it anymore. It's already been swallowed up in victory, Paul said. Come on. We got to forget this foolishness. Oh. And the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. The rocks separated. And I believe he was talking about that temple. He was talking about that natural temple that we have built. Okay? In here. See, they rent. They didn't fall down yet, but they were separated. And you know, a foundation that's been split apart isn't very strong. And it's not going to last forever. Thank God for that. Eventually, it'll all fall down. But this temple in us that we build up out of all these natural rocks that people give us isn't going to stand. And it says, and the graves were opened. Oh, my God. You were a grave. And you've been opened now. The veil is in you. And you've been opened up. And many bodies of the saints which slept. Hello, that was everybody. Everybody was asleep. Guess what? Some of them arose, didn't they? And they came out of the graves. Hello, flesh. You got a destiny. It's going back to the earth from where you came from. And these people are going to come out, like he said, and they came out of the graves, out of the flesh, after his resurrection. Notice everybody thinks this all happened right then, when the crucifixion happened. But it says, after the resurrection. There was no way to come out of them graves until he came out. It says, he went into the bowels of the earth, and he led captivity captive and brought them out. See, these people didn't get ahead of anything. This is just the way it's being worded and spoken out to us. And people can run in that and make a thing happen right then. But it said, after his resurrection. And they went where? Where'd it go? What's the holy city? What did John see in the book of Revelation in chapter 20, 21? He said, I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven as a bride adorned for her husband. Where did we go? Into the spirit realm. We walked into the Holy of Holies, the New Jerusalem. Oh, God. Take me a lap. I've got a bride along, though. Whew. And they appeared, what? To many. The word is really manifested. They manifested to many. What's your purpose? To manifest to many. When the saints come out of the grave, when you come out of this thing, it's not to sit back and say, I'm saved, now you go to hell. That's not what it's about. This is about you being that showbread in the temple, being set out that everyone can come by and break a piece of life off of you, and when they take it, they'll be just as alive as you are. There's no suffering in that. There's no suffering in giving this life away. You can't give it away. The more you give away, it seems like the more you got. I'm going to get excited yet. Now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake, those things that were done, they feared greatly and said, truly, this was the Son of God. There's one word wrong there. Not was. It's is. It's is. This is the Son of God. And many women were there beholding afar off. Many what? Souls. Many of the soulless ones were standing there afar off. Now notice where the soul is. So far off. That's where 99% of the people that go to church is at. They're afar off. They're still letting their woman run the show. They're not letting their man take his rightful place on the throne. The woman sitting on the throne. I'm not talking male and female, I'm talking spiritual things. And the women were sitting afar off, which followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering unto him. Now see, all these women that followed Jesus, the natural man, where were they at? Didn't say they was in the throne room, did it? See? They ministered to Jesus of Galilee. They did not minister to Jesus the Christ. See? Working again. Working, working, working. Martha, 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 you worry and fret so much. Mary has chosen the greater things, Miriam. And you know what? It won't be taken away from her. That ought to tickle you, Pink. Among which was Mary Magdalene. It's literally Miriam Magdalene. Miriam of Magdala. The word Mary is an English word. The language says Miriam. So Jesus' mother wasn't Mary. Her name was Miriam. And Mary, the mother of, or Miriam, the mother of James, and his name is not literally James. Look in the language. His name is Jacob. Miriam, the mother of Jacob. And Joseph is literally the name Joseph. And the mother of Zebedee's children. Now, who was Zebedee's children? James and John. Now, who was his mother? Who was his wife? The mother of them. Zebedee's wife. Salome. Salome. When the